You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Roma.
Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spicudeci ora, non spicudeci ora. Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spicudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Well, Daniel, our Giro is coming to an end. We're driving to Milan Malpensa Airport. We're ducking out a bit early. We're not going to Rome. It's a long way to Rome. But we will be watching the stage and we will report back later in the episode on tonight's final stage. But a dramatic start to our day. Probably more dramatic than anything that will happen in Rome. That's tempting fate by saying that.
Very stressful morning, hasn't it? Rich, I came down, well, on the Cycling Podcast spreadsheet, the now famous spreadsheet, it was specified that wheels should roll. I think it was 9:15. I was down there. I was waiting for you. Didn't know where you were. And just as we started to pull away, there was some kind of veterans Crown Green bowling team, I think, staying in our hotel. And they were pointing frantically at our front wheel, and I thought that I'd just dropped some litter under the car, which, you know, stuff's always falling out of my pockets. But no, they were pointing at a punctured wheel, and we were already cutting it a bit fine for me to get my flight. You're all right, Jack. And now we're cutting it even finer because you can take up the story.
I like it. Your solution to it initially was to leave me with the car and get a train to Milan.
You've got 4 hours more than me.
Oh, wonderful. Anyway, being the practical fellas that we are, we set about changing the wheel, only to realise that we didn't have the adapter to get the plastic covers of the nuts off. So we couldn't get our nuts off, and we were a bit stuck, and several people came to try and help. We called the local garage. They were on their way when An old man,
who can only have been Ayrton Senna's former trusted mechanic of 15 years, because he was an absolute wizard, wasn't he?
Well, this old man appeared, and he investigated. He had a good look. He established what the problem was. Whipped the penknife out. I mean,
back, and 3 minutes later we had a new wheel.
Not quite, but he did whip his penknife out, and that's all that we required.
That was a good sign.
Well, we're going to add this new column for the spreadsheet next year. Is going to have somebody's going to need to have a penknife every day. It was deep in his pockets. He pulled out. It was an old style penknife, and
unbranded.
You talked the other day about Swiss Army knife type of bike rider. Well, this was a Swiss Army knife type of old boy. And not only did he get the covers off the nuts, he then just took over. He wouldn't accept any assistance at all. And he took over, and within about 6 minutes, the wheel was replaced. It was wonderful. So here we are, and we're on our way to the airport to catch our respective flights home. Now, Daniel, dining last night in our hotel, we breathed the same air, as did our wine, as Fausto Coppi's son.
We did. Faustino, he's a bit of a fixture at bike races, particularly in this area of Italy, so the northwest of Italy. He still lives in Piemonte, but I think he lives in Turin. And he's been around, as I say, sort of on the fringes of the circuit for a while, and he was in the restaurant, wasn't he? While we were drinking. Can you remember what we were drinking last night? I don't think you paid
wine
that much attention. It was a local Valdostano red. Very good, actually.
I find it quite thrilling to be in the same room as Fausto Coppi's son. He does bear quite a resemblance to him. He's still got very dark hair.
He also bears quite a strong resemblance to Dan Lloyd, doesn't he?
Dan Lloyd, the heir of Fausto Coppi. Well, listen, we should reflect a little bit on what has been an outstanding race. It's traditional for you to give a race a wine glass rating. What's your verdict?
We've already had our 30 seconds talking about wine in this podcast. Now, I can't I can't reveal the wine glass rating until the end of the race, Rich, and the race hasn't finished yet. You know, all sorts could happen tonight. Chris Froome could attack again from the gun, and, you know, he could have a terrible collapse, and Tom Dumoulin could take 40 minutes on tonight's stage in Rome. And, you know, as one of our colleagues, Matt Dickinson's just suggested, they could then step like gladiators into the Colosseum, and they'll either get a thumbs up or thumbs down, and Kenny Ellison will win the Giro.
It's true that anything could happen yet, but this seems like you're just ducking.
Well, no, I won't reveal the rating just yet, but as a Giro, in the plus column, it's been another very suspenseful and dramatic battle for the general classification right up until, well, the outcome was uncertain right up until yesterday afternoon. This is what we're seeing more and more in Grand Tours. The margins are very, very small. The organisers are scaling back the kilometres against the watch, against the clock, in the hope of maintaining this suspense right up until the death, and that's what's happening. I think the route, on reflection, we didn't really realise this at the time when it was unveiled, was too hard. It was the stages in the last week were too long, unnecessarily long. I think the sprinting field was slightly weak, and that's not to take anything away from the likes of Sam Bennett and Elia Viviani, but I think the reduction of team sizes to 8 men has put the squeeze a little bit on sprinters. Most teams cannot afford to bring even half a lead out train and a GC rider, so then they're not. And I was also, you know, I harped on in the first half of the race about the lack of really top quality scattisti punchers, and I thought that there were some great courses there, great finales that would have seen a really exciting sort of ding-dong battles between some of the best punchers in the world, or could have, but those guys were simply not here, which was a change from Giri of 10 or 15 years ago, when this race seemed to specialise in, or certain riders seemed to specialise in coming to the Giro, those riders.
Yeah, I mean, we should reflect also on who's done well and who hasn't, and I don't know whether it's a consequence of the 8-man teams, but an awful lot of teams have been all but invisible here, really. The stage wins have been shared out among very few teams. You know, Quickstep have won, as we speak, 4, could be 5 tonight with Viviani in Rome, who knows. Mitchelson Scott have obviously won 5 stages as well, 3 different riders. I mean, Mitchelson Scott, I've said already on the podcast that Matt White, when he came to London in November last year, he knew his team for this race, and I think that the fact that those guys have known for so long what they were doing and been able to prepare for it has borne fruit. And, you know, Mikel Nieve, who it was quite quiet the first couple of weeks of the race. Matt White always said they needed him in these 3 hilly days, mountainous days in the Alps. And lo and behold, even though his leader, Simon Yates, had fallen away, Nieve popped up with a stage win on the final day in the Alps. So everybody seemed to get it right in that team, apart from Esteban Chavez. And I think he is the one member of that team who probably leaves the Giro with his value, his reputation, slightly diminished, and a slightly uncertain future for Esteban Chavez.
Although he's got a year left on his contract. And just to that point, Rich, about the Orica, Mitchelton Scott riders knowing from the start of the season that they were going to do this race, they also knew, or the Giro team here, I understand, knew that they would not be riding the Tour de France. I don't think there are going to be any riders who represented Mitchelton Scott in the Giro in their Tour de France team, and I think that also helps in the sense that, you know, they knew Rome was their finish line and they could really empty the tank in this Giro and not have to worry about how much or what effect it would have on the latter part of the season.
I think Simon Yates deserves great credit, not only for the way that he rode and really lit up the race, but, you know, we had an interview with him in last night's podcast, our penultimate podcast from Giro. He was very gracious, you know, and it was, he didn't need to stop and speak, and he did, and he was quite expansive. Another guy, Chris Juul Jensen, has been great throughout the Giro, as he said the other night. Obviously, it's easy to stop and chat when things go well, but when things don't go so well, he fronted up as well, and, you know, the whole team has they've added an awful lot to this Giro. I mean, teams that will go away with nothing really, there's quite a few of them. AG2R,
not
Education First have had a poor Giro. Bad luck for Mike Woods, who has been getting progressively more ill. You can hear it in his voice as he speaks as the race has gone on.
Yeah, AG2R are not noted for doing well in Giro, are they? I mean, they had Pots of Evo for a few years, but this year, just looking at their lineup with Geniez as the leader, it didn't inspire an awful lot of confidence. And EF Education First, powered by
Cannondale.
Drapac. I missed the Drapac bit. Where does that go in?
I don't know.
EF Education First, Drapac, powered by Cannondale.
Drapac.
Or powered by Summit, as Hugh Garthy said.
Yeah, I think the big disappointment, well, as far as we can see regarding that team, was that once Woods, it was clear that Woods was struggling, and he was even struggling quite early in the race, that the second part of the race should have become about looking for breakaways and taking opportunities, or at least sort of animating the race on that front. And I don't think it's really happened to the extent that it might have done, it should have done. I mean, they were, even the breakaway that did get to the finish at Prato Nervoso on yesterday, they were sort of conspicuous through their either absence or certainly lack of prominence in those moves.
The wildcard teams, the four wildcard teams, have all, you know, they've all shown themselves. Israel Cycling Academy in this last week have redeemed themselves by appearing in breaks and so on. But, you know, some of the World Tour teams, UAE Team Emirates, have had an absolute shocker. They're having a shocker of a season. Katusha Alpecin also having a poor season given their roster, and really didn't do much at all here at the Giro.
It's interesting, isn't it, when the rot sets in to a team and it seems to grow like gangrene, which is strange in the sense that most of the World Tour teams, they consist of three or four almost separate units. I mean, you always hear that there are some riders who will not see another member of the team throughout the whole season. So they're essentially four different teams, but they, at any given time, in certain squads, they all seem to be underperforming. So there's obviously a kind of, like I say, a rot sort of sets into a culture, a team culture at a certain point, or a lack of confidence spreads throughout a team.
I think it also, Movistar, classic case of that, I think, where they have multiple different teams. They've performed, probably little was expected of them here at the Giro. They've performed really well, a stage win and fourth overall for Richard Carapaz. And I think that will buoy the Tour de France team, because they don't go in there with the same sort of pressure. Had they done nothing here, as Movistar had a couple of Grand Tours last year where they did nothing, it does increase the pressure on the team going into the next one. So I think that they'll carry some confidence from their showing here into the Tour de France, which is quite a daunting prospect for everybody, given the three Galacticos on that team. Trek Segafredo, another really disappointing team. A team that started really well this season, very strongly indeed, but has fallen away a bit. Ryan Mullins is worth a mention for finishing this Giro, his first Grand Tour. But overall, a disappointing Giro for them in what's becoming quite a disappointing season.
A San Francisco.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa, our main sponsor. We're very grateful for their support. They have helped us be here and cover this race. It's the third year we've covered the Giro from start to finish, and we couldn't do it without Rafa. I took the unilateral decision yesterday of presenting.
You're taking a unilateral decision? That's unusual.
It's highly irregular, but Sven Tuft has been getting a lot of a lot of love. I suppose it could be his last Grand Tour. He turned 41 during this Giro. A lot of people asking, clamouring for him to be our overall Pedler de Charme. He was second in the poll, in fact, to Simon Yates. But I saw him near the showers yesterday, and I decided...
Honorary lifetime achievement, yeah, Pedler de Charme.
I felt it was worth something, so I gave him a Pedler de Charme T-shirt. And we'll hear from him in a moment, and we'll hear from some other riders and people around the race as they reflect on what has been a memorable Giro. Couple of bits of business before I do that. We haven't been mentioning much our book, A Journey Through the Cycling Year, but that is available in all good bookshops and on Amazon and places like that. It's mainly diaries from the Grand Tours last year, and if you're missing the Giro this week, this coming week, it may fill a little void. It's it has some guest chapters as well. Ciro Scognamiglio has penned a love letter to Filippo Pozzato. Francois Thomas has written a couple of chapters, Orla Chinoui, Fran Reyes, and it's hopefully it'll be a good read. Well, I think it's a good read. I'm biased, but there you go. It's coming out as an audiobook in a few weeks as well, so look out for that. Our latest Friends special will be released very soon. That is our recording of our live show in Hackney earlier this year. It's a bit of a bumper edition. That includes bits that we recorded while we were touring around as well. So it comes in at just under 2 hours, that. But that will be available to friends of the podcast in the next few days. And if you've not already signed up as a friend of the podcast, you can get all our Kilometre Zeros from the Giro. That's a shorter morning episodes at thecyclingpodcast.com. It costs £15. And this coming week, we will be doing a final kind of look back on the Giro. I suspect that's what it'll be. A final press conference when we answer some of your questions that you phone in. You can find the number on our Twitter biog. In fact, I can probably read it to you now. The trick is to leave a voice memo. Don't try and call the number. Just leave a voice memo and we will play your question and try and answer it. The number is +44 7971 338 205. That's +44 7971 338 205. Now, we spoke to some of the riders and other people around the race yesterday on our last day of the Giro, before and after stage 20, just to get some of their best memories and highlights of the race. Tufft, Mitchelton Scott.
Yeah, it's been it's been an incredible experience to be a part of this because you know, we came in with high ambitions and everything was going that way. It was going better than we could have expected, and obviously the defense of the jersey, just it can also wear you down too, and that's everyone, the guy wearing the jersey, but also the whole team. So yeah, we had some incredible highs and then experienced some lows, but then Nieve just finished it off in such a fantastic way that, you know, I think none of us are down about this Giro. It's been one of the best experiences for all of us, but also in the development of our team as a general classification team.
Davide Formolo, Bora Hansgrohe.
I'm feeling better now. All is over. No, yeah, it was really tough stage after yesterday. Really, we went really full gas. So today in the beginning, I think everybody feels still different from yesterday. But I started to make good rhythm in the first two climbs, and everybody attacked in the final, and everybody tried their own chance. It was strange zero, starting with a crash, losing 5 minutes, and then it was mostly only to see if I could win a stage. Maybe now I'm also top 10 in GC, but I couldn't win a stage. A few podium. Yeah, nice zero for the team. We have a few victory with Sam. Tomorrow we have another chance with him. And two guys top 10, really good, I think, for the team.
Domenico Pozzovivo, Bahrain Merida.
Yeah, I'm disappointed because in one day I lost the possibility to be on podium, but I'm already happy for the Giro that I had done, and also the team with the win of Moric. We are satisfied and we look forward. bad. It was not a good day. I don't felt my leg as the other days, so I tried to manage my form of the day. So it's important to rest on the fight, and because other contender in one bad day had lost all, and me, I rest in top five is good.
Chris Hamilton, Team Sunweb. And for me, it's an amazing experience. Like, I mean, it's our second Grand Tour, first Giro, and to be a part of this team, you know, we're battling for the win. It's pretty special.
I'm Alex Dowser of Team Katusha Alpecin. I guess both time trials, like, it's no secret that I've sort of been, you know, not lived up to the potential that I showed in 2013. You know, not necessarily through, there's been a lot of bad luck over the last couple of years. But, you know, I felt like, especially the second time, like the prologue, I can do technical prologues, I'm good at technical. Competing with, you know, some of the world's best on days where you just have to slog it out for a sustained period of time hasn't, I'd say that's where weaknesses get shown out. And for me, that was a real positive result, actually. Just to be, you know, not far actually off the top guys at all. And, you know, I think there's more to come. I'm in a really good place. I'm obviously happy to be towards the back end of this Giro, and being able to knock out that TT at the back end of the Giro is a good thing as well. So, and then there's obviously been a lot of suffering as well. Just getting through yesterday was a fight from start to finish. Really, I'm content with how I've done.
Okay, I'm George Preiler, and I ride for Groupama FDJ. Well, I got remembered every day by pain in the legs. No, the Giro is always nice, and there's so many memories, but if every day is unique, and honestly, I can't describe the standard memory. Like, every day is a unique day, and so many impressions every day. And yeah, it seems like a year ago almost. but it was also, it was a nice start, something very, very special. And I'm curious what the next few years will bring in the Giro.
Chris Snellens, Israel Cycling Academy. I train a lot. something new for me, some new experience. So I don't know, maybe after the Giro I will see some memories, but at the moment it's just a bike race, you know. I think we are getting better every day, so for the, especially we are quite young team, like with the young riders, and it's good to get good experience for the future. So I mean, yeah, we are enjoying a lot and we have a lot of fun. From one side, yes, because it's a long race and you are getting tired, but at the same time, I feel like I'm getting, I would say, better every day. So I don't know how it continues if we do a few more days, you know? So yeah.
Michael Woods, Education First Drop Pack.
Yeah, really sick. Well, not really sick, just really bad bronchitis. Yeah, just coughing like crazy. A lot of nasal congestion. Not fun.
So not your best?
No, yeah, it hasn't been the Giro I wanted. Like, I've been battling with these lung issues for the last 14 days, and every day I just get a bit worse. Certainly, like, I mean, even though I've been suffering, like, Grand Tours are always special. This is the deepest I've ever gone in a Grand Tour from just an endurance perspective. Like, it's been tough for me finishing the last few days, so proud of myself to be here. And also, I think Stage 4 was pretty cool. I almost won. That was awesome.
Hi, I'm Sam Bennett, and I ride for Bora Hansgrohe. It's great to come here with a strong team and to have such a successful Giro. We have one guy in the top 10 and one in, I think, 11th position in GC, so I think we're really, really happy with that. I think there's some teams that have really nothing here, and it's a great moment for us, I think. Yeah, yesterday was one of my hardest stages I've done, I think, in the last four Grand Tours. I went over the first climb with the climbers and blew up in the next climb, and it's a long way from home still, so hopefully I'm recovered today and I can survive.
Kenny Ellison, Team Sky.
I think my best memories will be Sestriere, like putting a big pull for Chris, and then Chris seeing him going alone, and then seeing that he won the Giro this day. So I was really, I had the impression to really be part of this performance. And I saw when I was in Zonkoland really struggling, and to just finish the race on her in the radio I was winning was also something really special. So these both memories will be, and I think tomorrow Rome will be another one.
Markel Irizar, Trek Segafredo.
I would like to be better, of course, but the level has been unbelievable, crazy. I am 15 years pro, and I am surprised that I think I have never seen such a high level, you know. We have all the data, you know, like, and you know how I was going in the last years, and it was unbelievable. I was in two breakaways. I would like to do it better, but there was not more chance to show yourself, because the level was high, the race was super fast. There was only one day that the breakaway made it to the finish. And we really tried, but it was not possible to get more for this race.
I don't know, what were the best moments?
Tristan Hoffman, Director Sportif, Bahrain, Merida.
What?
Your best memory.
Oh, my best memory? No, we came here to with the goal to win a stage and dream about the podium. We won a stage with Mattia, and we have Pozzovivo on the fifth place, so this is my good memory of the Giro. And in general, I have to say the team did fantastic, so that's really good to see.
Nothing about the food, the wine, the landscapes, Tristan?
Actually, that's true. How older you get, the more you appreciate Italy.
What are you trying to say? Do you know the name of this mountain we're looking at the moment?
I have no idea.
It's the Matterhorn. It's the second most famous mountain in the Alps.
I just want to say that the Matterhorn, it's impressionante. Oh, that's French, eh? No, I really enjoyed the Giro. What I said before, I really enjoyed the landscapes. I enjoyed to go to Israel. So for me, we go to Rome now. We have over there a good glass of wine and some more good food, and then we go home.
Marco Pinotti, BMC coach.
It's the final circuit in Iseo. The circuit that emphasizes what is Giro, what is about the Giro. A toboga there with lots of people and a crazy circuit, thunderstorm coming, racing under the sun with the thunderstorm in 2 kilometers. That was the most moment I remember the most.
Ben King, Dimension Data.
Yesterday I talked to Bert van Linderman. I had never spoken with him before. And he just said hello, and we talked about fishing for like 10 minutes, so that really helped pass the time. Looking forward to going back to America. Shoot, yeah, still have to get through tomorrow, but then spend some downtime and fishing pole and beer on the lake and just relax, absorb all this, and hit the second half of the season strong.
Patrick Conrad, Bora Hansgrohe.
My best memory of the Giro. Oh, they're good memories. I think the best memory was our stage win. Yeah, I think this was the most emotional point, because we worked so hard for it. Already since last year, we worked really hard, and we worked hard last year already almost for the stage win. So this year we really, really won it, and we worked again really hard, and we finally made it. So this was I think this was my best memory, yeah.
And one place or one location that you discovered on the Giro that you really loved?
When we were on the Garda Lake. That was a nice area.
Leon de Kort, this journalist for Pro Cycling. My sweetest memory is the first day of the Giro d'Italia when Tom Dumoulin won the time trial in Jerusalem. I didn't expect it, and he did it, but he won and he started very well. I think that was one of the most beautiful things of this Giro for me.
Gianni Savio, Androni Giocattoli team manager.
The best memory of this Giro, Fausto Masnada in the finish of the stage when he was possibly winner. In the three last kilometers. And so in this moment there were a big participation. I thought in this moment that he would be the winner. After was not possible, but I think that this is the best memory.
Renaat Schotten, also known as Wielerman. I'm working for Sportza, and it's my 18th Giro. My best memory this year is without a doubt being on top of the Finestre and actually seeing pass by all the main actors of this crazy race that it was this year, with an epic scenario unfolding from the unsealed roads on the Finestre towards the finish line. That was really something, and I've never experienced something similar in those 18 years of covering the Giro. Really unforgettable, and gives me goosebumps thinking back of it.
So in your 18 Giros, I mean, in terms of excitement, drama, does this rank up there among the best, do you think?
That's a difficult question, of course, but I think I have to put it on number one, because simply from my personal experience, most of those Giri I was in the commentary booth for Sportza, but now I was roadside. So if you're able to witness something historic like we saw yesterday from nearby, then it really gives an extra edge, way more than being in a commentary booth at the finish line and watch it or on a screen. So I have to say it's my number one experience in the Giro ever, yeah.
Who deserves credit for that? Is it the route or the riders or a combination of the two?
I think it's a combination. It's a combination of the setup of the typical setup of the Tour of Italy with a grand finale and the end with, the, like this year, three mountaintop finishes in a row. And then combine that with the unpredictable kind of racing we always kind of have in the Giro. And there were so many stages where they went flat out from the very start and until the very end in a way that they exceeded many, many Tour de France's. It's really unseen of, even for Giro standards. So I think put that together, and then the run-up towards the Finestre yesterday was a hellish run-up, and then a setup where actually everybody, the main actors, came suddenly in the ring by their own. No domestiques, no more support except the team cars and the feeding and stuff. It was man against man. It was cycling at its purest, and I think that's the difficult thing for a lot of people to understand. The kind of cycling we saw on the Finestre and afterwards is the kind of cycling you don't see nowadays, because it really was man to man. And I would compare it with the modern triathlon. That's also long distance efforts, individual, no slipstreaming and stuff usually allowed, especially in the Ironman. I think yesterday's stage was kind of the same, with a couple of tactical decisions in between. Dumoulin doubting, thinking of that Reichenbach. I don't know why. He should have ridden by himself, just fully against Froome, and see what happens, because now he probably lost very valuable time in the descents. If you look at the stats, he might have lost by the end of the calculation the Giro in the descents and with the bonus times.
Ciao, listeners.
It's that time again, Ciro. Another Giro bites the dust. Where have the last 3 weeks gone? Has it felt to you like a long 3 weeks or a slow 3 weeks?
Slow, especially the second part. You know, dear listeners, you really can imagine why. A good, really first part, because even in Israel, we went for the third stage on a beach, Eilat, the Red Sea, and the Sicily and the south of Italy. I mean, the last part, and Richard, you can now, our listeners can't see this, fortunately, hopefully, because we have mountains in front of us, rainy, a cloudy sky, but the sky is also the topic of this Giro number 101.
Nice link, Giro. Well, Thank you. The race has twisted and turned in the last few days. Simon Yates, you were building up a very nice relationship with him, with your little cozy chats after the press conference, and the race has turned. Now, I got the impression that the Italian people seemed to take Simon Yates to their hearts, that he seemed to be quite popular for the way that he races. Is that correct?
Yes, it's true. I mean, he has been very loved by the Italian public because it's not really usual to see a rider also when he's with a pink jersey try to attack more or less every day. Maybe also for this, he had a terrible day in the stage of Colle delle Finestre, but at the end, certainly, he leaves this Giro with 3 stage victories, 13 days in pink. Better this way, in my opinion, than maybe to finish between the 5th and the 7th position, but without any victories or something like that.
Indeed, and Chris Froome is the winner. How has that gone down with the Italian fans and the Italian media? Froome, you know, there is this cloud. We're beneath all these grey clouds, and maybe it's Chris Froome. Maybe this is Chris Froome's cloud that we're all under. Maybe it's because he's effectively won the Giro that we're all being rained on now. Who knows? But how did they take his performance on Friday to win that stage, and the fact that he's going to be the Giro winner?
No, I mean, but very good. I have the impression that the Italian public suits him better than the French public, for example. I mean, we remember some polemics during the last Tour de France with the public on the road against him. Here, I think there is a better feeling. Maybe also because, he started his career in a certain way in Italy, because before Sky he was at the team Barloworld, and he lived for 2 or 3 years before in the north of Italy, then in Tuscany.
Every day there'd be huge support for Fabio Aru, big crowds around his bus. Pozzovivo is almost the forgotten one, isn't he? He doesn't get that same adulation.
Yeah, it's true, exactly. I mean, in these years, certainly Nibali has been the star, also Aru after Nibali. Pozzovivo is always a little bit in the shadow, and it's a pity because, he is, in my opinion, a consistent rider. I mean, his 12th participation in the Giro, certainly he has no stage victories this year, but a good fifth of position in a Giro. We have to remember that I have the impression that the level of the stars has been really high, so a good result from him.
And Davide Formolo crept into the top 10 today as well.
Exactly. His progression, for the moment, is a good progression, but so far he's not able to do a step more. Not really. I mean, he's still 25, but for example, he's the same age of Simon Yates. Certainly he has the time, but from next Giro he has to do something more, in my opinion, because so far in his career only 1 victory, a stage in Giro d'Italia 3 years ago, so he has to improve.
What next for Giro?
Listeners, now I have big problems in the first big trouble in the first part of June, because I'm obliged to remain in Milan at the office and then to go to my nightmare, Passo San Pellegrino, a training camp of Vincenzo Nibali. Dear listeners, you can imagine. Hopefully, after this, I will have more or less 8-9 days off. A preparation at the sea level, not in altitude, for the Tour de France. And for the Tour de France, I can imagine, Richard, a lot of cycling podcast again.
Oh, we look forward to it, Ciro. We can't wait to for you to join us in France.
Thanks.
For the moment, arrivederci.
Arrivederci, ciao.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. A reminder that as you can throughout the year, you can get 25% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. And we are enormously grateful to Science in Sport for their support, which enables us to be here. Or enabled us to be there, because I'm now back in London and I'm on the phone to friend of the podcast.
Always.
Lionel Burney.
Always, Rich. Hello.
Lionel. Now, Lionel.
Hello, hello
we
everyone.
Traveling...
Hello, everyone. Remember me?
Yeah. It's not been that long. It probably feels like it.
It
but
does.
I'm going to ask you for your reflection on the race in a moment, but... You perform the, you know, when I have a go at the tail of the tapper, it only shows and throws into sharp focus what a great job you do of that. So can you tell me what happened today? Because I actually missed it. I was in the air at the time.
Well, more or less I can, Rich. I actually went out for a bike ride this morning and was pretty tired this afternoon. I went out to on my own. I rode about 80 kilometres just to see if it can be done by a human being, and it can.
What, alone?
Alone, a solo 80k ride this morning. I managed it.
Recalls?
No calls at all. I mean, just short climbs in the Chilterns, obviously. Nothing significant. No, I was absolutely creeping at one point. It was I got my fueling all wrong. But anyway, so when I got...
You didn't have people out on the route?
I didn't.
In high vis vest.
That's what I should have done, isn't it? I should have had people
that's everyone's
out.
Doing that now.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing that now.
Yeah, I'll rope a few people in for tomorrow. So when I did watch some of the stage. Obviously, I saw the bit where it was all being neutralised. It was the final stage in Rome, and it was obviously to show off the Italian capital. They were going past all of the famous landmarks. It looked fantastic from the air, but the problem was the road surface. Cobbles in places, those kind of slick city centre cobbles. Some of the rest of the road surfaces look really uneven as well, and it was fairly clear early on that the riders weren't particularly enamoured with the idea of racing full bore over what was at places a very tight circuit as well. There are areas where it suddenly narrowed down because they were doing some kind of roadworks on the pavement or maintenance work to a building or whatever it was. But it was, there were some really tricky parts to it, and we saw.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Lionel, because it's been used quite a lot. The problems in Rome with even refuse collection and stuff and potholes. Basically, the mayor there, Virginia Raggi. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. I need Daniel for pronunciation, but it's quite a controversial figure. She's from the five-star political party, and apparently not doing a great job of running Rome. There you go.
Wow.
Politics.
Wow, you did a bit of research. I didn't have time to do. To
no,
do
I mean
that,
it's been a story that's been a story that's been bubbling away. That you know, they don't have enough money to basically maintain the city.
Right.
Anyway,
well,
that maybe had an impact today.
Well, I think the road surfaces in general weren't great. There was also sections, you know, where just a man with a flag standing on a traffic island and or a little island in the middle of the road. It didn't look like they hadn't given it the five-star safety treatment, put it that way. And I think the riders decided fairly early on that they didn't want to race around it and risk their necks after what's been a pretty grueling Giro. We saw Elia Viviani having a chat with the UCI commissaire. Then Viviani had a chat with Chris Froome, and then Chris Froome had a chat with the commissaire. And although I couldn't pick up from the TV exactly what was being said, it was fairly clear that they had decided to take the times for GC very early in the stage and really only race the last couple of laps. And so we had this quite surreal sight at the end of the race, the last sort of 25 kilometres, the last couple of laps, where anyone who was in it to try and win it and their teammates were in a front group, and Chris Froome and all the GC riders were in a much larger back group that quickly lost the 5 minutes, 6 minutes, then eventually well over 10 minutes. But it was a sprint finish, and the reduced size of the group probably made it a bit safer. It was kind of Quickstep versus Bora Hansgrohe, and Sam Bennett won his third stage of the race. Viviani was second. Between them, they've won seven overall, and you know, really cleaned up on the sprinting front. And so no changes overall, although, you know, Froome and co all came in, as I say, well down. Froome did his now customary crossing the line with all of his teammates, sort of arm in arm, and yeah, he won the Giro. He is the third rider after Eddy Merckx and Bernard Hinault to hold all three Grand Tour titles at the same time, and the seventh rider of all time to win all three Grand Tours. So, yeah, 46 seconds gap over Tom Dumoulin. Miguel Angel Lopez, third place, and also the white jersey as best young rider. Froome also scooped the King of the Mountains, and Elia Viviani won the points. But it was all about Sam Bennett, really, winning a third stage. You know, he's really been through the mill the last couple of days. He was interviewed on Eurosport afterwards and talked about how hard the last 2 days have been for him.
Just told us that in the last part of this podcast, Lionel.
There we are. You've got to bear in mind, I've not actually been listening to it.
You're excused.
But the whole kind of final day, you know, ceremonial ride, the gloss was taken off a little bit, I guess, because it wasn't really a race. It was quite peculiar. It reminded me of that stage in Milan in 2009, which came at the end of the first week. The 2009 Giro was marking the centenary, wasn't it? 100 years of the Giro. And there was this city centre crit in Milan, and very similar problem, really. The circuit was not deemed suitable, and they pretty much neutralised it right until the end and had a sprint, and Mark Cavendish won the stage. But there were stronger protests that day, I think, than today.
I think Lance Armstrong was involved in that.
Yeah, that's right.
His first Grand Tour back in his comeback.
Yeah, and he was probably like, "Oh man, this isn't right. This isn't
what am I doing? I could be in Austin with a cold beer."
Exactly, getting his ass handed to him on a plate round the streets of Milan. Today it was much more kind of convivial, really. I think everyone probably recognised that the riders had the whip hand here. They weren't going to be pushing on, and it was sensible, but probably not the finale that the Giro organisers were hoping for, I guess.
A shame, a bit of a damp squib to end what has been a really thrilling 3 weeks. And it's funny, when you're there and wrapped up in it, you know, you don't have the distance or the perspective. We heard Renat Schot say that it's the best Giro he's been on in the 18 that he's covered. But I think already we can probably look on this as one of the great races, really. And I think there were so many twists and turns. And, you know, we've been, the last couple of days on the Giro have been strange, in the aftermath of Froome's astonishing attack, and where he turned the race on its head, really. But, I mean, you've been in touch with us a lot, Lionel, by text message. So, and I've had the impression that you're feeling like you're missing out. What was it like following it from home, and what were your thoughts on what happened?
Well, it's completely different. Obviously, you see a lot more of the actual nuts and bolts of the racing. You pick up a lot on little things that happen, but you feel detached from it. You're not inside, literally inside the bubble, picking up the stuff that people on TV can't see, which you guys obviously were doing. And it was really interesting watching Friday's stage unfold, you know, in real time on TV. It was an astonishing performance by Chris Froome, and it was kind of everything that people have been crying out for in Grand Tour racing over the last few years. I mean, well, not the last few years, the last decade or so. These kind of exploits used to be the thing that made cycle racing, Grand Tour racing, the captivating spectacles of the summer. You know, people would flock to radios or leave work early in order to catch up with what was going on the road, and the sort of the heroics would sort of magnify in stature that the less people could see, I guess. And here we had Chris Froome attacking with 80 kilometres to go, really an all-or-nothing attack to win the Giro. And it was just interesting to kind of be on the edge of a seat watching it and seeing the time gap and go up and seeing just exactly how he won it. You know, it was one of those ones, wasn't it, where he got the gap and just stretched it away gradually and then really put that commitment, you know, really turned on the commitment on the descent and the valley road, by which time the hesitation behind had really shaped the rest of the afternoon. And then it was a case of whether Froome could maintain that gap, hang on and do enough to win the race. And as a TV sporting spectacle, it was absolutely captivating. You know, can't describe it any other way. You know, it knocked Nibali's heroics a couple of years ago into a cocked hat, really, and that was pretty special at the time. But then, obviously, being here and not being there, and seeing the way that the you know, particularly social media reacts, or people on social media, because I don't want to just lump everybody in together as having the same views, because you do see a wide range of views, but it is so split. People who don't like Chris Froome, don't like Team Sky, don't trust Froome and Sky, you know, really saw that as evidence that you know, it was a dishonest performance, and really the battle lines on that are drawn. And anyone who kind of sits in the middle with a sense of, well, we don't really know, is kind of being cast almost as an appeaser, which I think is a really unfortunate sort of turn of events. We're in danger here of losing something that is absolutely fundamental to the spectacle of watching these races.
Well, absolutely, and it changed the experience of covering the race too over the last couple of days. You know, we'd had a race, and suddenly we had a race that was again being won by Team Sky, and that completely sort of changed the narrative, if you like. But you're absolutely right. You know, the first tour I watched in its entirety, 1986, day one in the Pyrenees, Bernardino took off with one rider, Pedro Delgado, with a lot of favourites behind him, and gained over 4 minutes. He took off again the next day and gained another 4 minutes, and then lost it all towards the end of the stage. I mean, Eno was at a stage in his career similar to where Froome is, in a way. The twilight years, he was gambling and taking risks that he hadn't taken earlier in his career, where he used to ride actually very, very conservatively and in a very calculating fashion. And Froome has never had to take these risks before. He's never been in a position before where he's had nothing to lose and everything to gain by trying a move like that. He's not had to do it. Here, it was the win or nothing, you know, and he gambled everything on it. So we can't even, there's nothing to compare it to in his career. And a lot of people are calling it the best ride of his career, you know, and undoubtedly the most spectacular. What I'm trying to say is he's probably been capable of that before, but just not needed to do it. I mean, that's you know, and it is a part of a sort of wider trend that we've seen in the classics as well. Guys going from a bit further out. I mean, Philippe Gilbert at the Tour of Flanders last year, not a dissimilar distance. So it's kind of counterintuitive, but we are seeing some quite spectacular exploits.
Yeah, I think the difficulty is, you know, when we compare with eras, I mean, you mentioned the 80s there, and without name, you know, without pinning any allegations to any individuals, I mean, that was not an era of, you know, absolute probity and whiter than whiteness. I mean, it was an era where substances were used, you know, the substances of the era were used, and so it's a really tricky one. And I think that was the thing that really struck me, was seeing George Bennett's comments when they were, you know, the film was uploaded by his team, Lotto NL Jumbo, and you know, he compared it to Floyd Landis. I know you guys have talked about this, but and then the sort of clarification that came later in the day, and then George Bennett's comments to Daniel the following morning when Daniel asked him you know, what he'd meant by those comments. And I think watching that little story unfold the way it did, it's almost the whole issue in microcosm is that that a comment will be seized upon to reflect a wider truth, whether that was intended or not. And then when there's a clarification, that will be evidence of a sort of sport-wide conspiracy and cover-up, and, oh, well, they would say that now. And, I mean, just from having been in the bubble and just recently left it a few days before, I mean, that whole notion is preposterous. People don't operate like that. We're not, in my experience, in the bubble. Yeah, okay, it was an unguarded comment by George Bennett, and perhaps if he'd thought about the wider ramifications of comparing Chris Froome's ride to Floyd Landis's exploits in 2006, he might have thought, well, maybe I won't say that. But it doesn't necessarily follow that he was trying to draw a sinister conclusion, and then that was kind of all smoothed over again in a sort of cynical PR move the next day. I just don't swallow that line of questioning. But that now is being accepted as, oh, well, that was what happened. That now is the narrative on that particular thing. And I think that's very unfortunate. And I also think that the continuing trend for analysing performances and using performance as a barometer. I mean, Chris Froome is, keep out of it the salbutamol adverse analytical finding from the Vuelta just for the moment, but I mean, his Grand Tour pedigree since 2011 has been pretty consistent and of a very high level. The people who argue that he came from nowhere prior to 2011, well, okay, we can debate that, but he hasn't, this hasn't been a flash in the pan period of Grand Tour results for Chris Froome. If anyone is going to be capable of that performance, it's going to be somebody like him. And I think it's unfortunate that we're in an era where you can look at the Giro and say, well, being strong for 2 weeks and cracking spectacularly is seen as suspicious by some, or having a rough time for 2 weeks, hanging in there and then coming on strong in the last week, that's seen as suspicious by some, or being roughly at the same level all through the 3 weeks is also seen as suspicious by some. I mean, we can't have it all ways, and I think we're denying ourselves the ability to evaluate these races on any kind of sporting, in any kind of sporting context, if we continue with these kind of thought processes and patterns. Having said that, Chris Froome placed the Giro in a position by deciding to start. He's perfectly entitled to do so while this case is unresolved. But I do think that in hindsight, the cycling world, the authorities, the teams, and everybody who has an interest in the reputation of the sport probably should have got involved in how this case was being resolved a bit earlier, so that it can come to some kind of conclusion as soon as is possible.
Absolutely. Sorry. No, I don't disagree with anything there. If you step back from it, you look at the final result, and Chris Froome has won the Giro by 46 seconds from Tom Dumoulin, and on the really critical stage, he gained just over a minute and a half on him on the climbs. And if you'd been told that at the start of the Giro, you'd have said that's certainly not unexpected. The end result is not unexpected. It's the way that it was achieved that was quite remarkable. I mean,
it was Rich, but as you sort of discussed in the podcast, Froome, and when we talked about Simon Yates and his move on the stage to Zapata, what we see when one rider is absolutely committed to a move and the rest behind are, they've got the psychological doubt, they've got the mind games going on, there's split, they've all got something different to go for. And in the case of the stage on Friday, Dumoulin really was the only one who had to go for it.
He was the only one trying to win the race.
Yeah, everybody else could afford to play, for want of a better phrase, silly buggers, sitting in his slipstream. Sorry, I've been back in Blighty for too long.
Yeah, we've been drinking today. I know it's been a hot, sunny day.
Lopez and Carapaz got a bit of flack for not joining in. Well, this is pretty much page one of the tactics manual. They were competing in their race within a race, as we saw when they came to the top of the climb. It's kind of weird to extrapolate so many different conclusions from a set of circumstances when you can see the circumstances with your own eyes. Had those five all equally wanted to chase down Chris Froome, then it might well have been a lot closer, but that simply wasn't the case.
Indeed. Well, Lionel,
anyway,
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking about the Giro again in our midweek episode, our third press conference. I mentioned earlier, you can call our number and leave a message, and me and Daniel think are convening on Wednesday to do that, possibly Tuesday or Wednesday. So I'm sure there'll be other questions about this that we can. We'll be talking about this Giro for a long time, I suspect. And you know, it was a fantastic race to be at and to witness, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think Daniel did, and hope you did too.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed the bit I did, and it had that kind of fear of missing out writ large, being home for the final week. It was it would have been great to have been there and witnessed it, but I saw a completely different version of the same story, if you like. You do get a totally different sense of it from TV compared to being there, and I listening to the podcast kind of filled in the gaps for me. Certainly it was an interesting week, to say the least. Well done, chaps.
Okay, Daniel, I've tweeted EasyJet. If my flight is delayed, does that mean I can check my bag in a bit later, asking for a friend? Which I am.
I would like you to have gone into more detail with that, Rich. Been a bit more specific, explained our...
So maybe it's not just anybody, it's for Daniel Freeb.
He's got a lot of Welsh fans. And, you know, explain the specific circumstances...
Would that have
meant that you would have had to confess to being, to getting to breakfast or getting down to the car 10 minutes after the specified time on the spreadsheet this morning?
Well, it's confusing this morning. She told me breakfast at 8:45, which was cutting it a little bit fine if you wanted to leave at 9. But you're keen to get home, aren't you, or to wherever you call home at the moment? Because you're back in the institution in a few days.
That's true. I've got four. We were talking at breakfast, weren't we? Well, less than a week before I have to go to the Dauphiné. It's kind of like someone who's been in jail for an extended period and then leaves and goes straight to the nearest convenience store and tucks a bottle of gin under his trench coat just so he can get arrested again and get back in the institution.
Well, Daniel, I wish you the best of luck with that. I hope you can get back to your island paradise, Majorca, I believe you're going. Or is that confidential? So, and then you're back at the Dauphiné and straight back on that treadmill. We will speak before then because we're going to do, as I mentioned, our press conference midweek. Before we sign off from the Giro d'Italia, though, we need to say a few thanks. There are a few people to whom we're very grateful. Some of them help behind the scenes and they do a fantastic job for us. In particular, thanks to Jonathan Rowe, who is one of our producers, but also... and more importantly, the guy who runs our friends scheme, answers all your technical queries, helps you get the friends specials on your mobile device. We had an email commending our customer services department. Well, it's Jonathan. He's 24/7. He is available, I think. It seems like that anyway. And he does a fantastic job. We must say a very special thanks to Amara Terra, whose music has enlivened our coverage. I hope you'll agree. It's fantastic. We've got a good relationship with them now. Third year we've used their music, and it's great that so many of you seem to enjoy it. They've got a gig coming up in London actually next weekend. Have a look at their Twitter feed or somewhere for details of that. But they're a great band live, and we're hoping to do a show with them towards the end of the year. We'll let you know about that when we have some more details. Thanks as ever to Ciro Scognamiglio, our friend from Gazzetta dello Sport, who also helps to enliven our Giro d'Italia coverage. Thanks very much to our team of wonderful producers, Adam Bowie, Tom Wally, Will Jones, John Mooney, Paul Scoynes and Matt Field have all been producing episodes from this Giro d'Italia. Will Jones did a lot of the Kilometre Zeros, which sounded fantastic. Thank you to our main sponsor, Rafa, and to Science and Sport, whose support throughout the year helps us produce the weekly episodes and to come to the Grand Tours and cover them daily. Thanks to Audioboom, our platform, who've been hosting our podcast since day one, and as far as I'm aware, there's never really been any kind of technical glitch. So they provide a fantastic service, and we're very grateful to them. Thanks also to David Loxton, Nick Walters and Rebecca Winfield, who look after the kind of sponsorship and business side of a lot of the podcasts, and we're very grateful to them too. Anything else to say before we leave, Daniel?
No, just thanks very much for all the great feedback we've had from our listeners. Thanks for tuning in every day or most days or whenever you've tuned in. It's been fantastic to feel as though we're sharing this whole journey with them, and that's what we strive to do. We strive to bring people with us on location as much as we can with the sounds and the flavors. I know, you know, that's a subject close to your heart, Rich, the flavors. Yeah, hopefully to some extent we've succeeded, and it's been very enjoyable.
Has been enjoyable, the most enjoyable Giro yet, I think. And yeah, as Daniel says, we're very grateful for all the feedback that we get. It seems there's been more of this Giro, and there seems to be more of you listening, which is great. And the phone calls that we've been getting for our press conference episodes, there have been a lot of them, and really interesting questions asked as well. So, as I say, you can still keep them coming in over the next couple of days. That's all. Arrivederci. Thank you very much. Thank you, Daniel.
Alla prossima.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Ci gira nella delle buongiardine, te la raccolgo con l'acqua e l'ovina.